This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. The Jets and the New York Islanders tomorrow evening. Tonight, the Manitoba Moose, they're in Texas to face off against the Stars. Let's go to the Hockey Show hotline and talk a little bit about the Manitoba Moose.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program Manitoba Moose play-by-play voice Daniel Fink. Daniel, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys.
Our pleasure. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Moose. They were had their season opener last night in San Antonio, dropping a 2-1 decision to the San Antonio Rampage tonight. Again, like I said, they're in Texas to face the Stars, a game you can hear live here on TSN Radio 1290 and moosehockey.com. Daniel, you know, you look at this Moose team, and it's very similar to last year's roster, a team that fell just short of the playoffs after making that stirring second-half run to get back into it after being one of the bottom teams in the AHL. You know, what is this team going to be? Is this team going to be the team that was so successful at the second half of last year, or is this a team that's going to be sort of trying to find its feet early on in the season?
Well, I think maybe somewhere in between. It's tough to keep up a run like they had in the second half of the season. It was pretty miraculous, and it's tough to be as rough as they were at the beginning of the season last year. So I think your answer is probably somewhere in between. But it is nice to see that all those returning guys come back, and they have that continuity. It really gives the coaching staff a base that they can work from. Being able to talk to the guys and have them already know the systems. I was talking to Pascal Vincent last night. He said it let them get into more advanced things through their training camp and stuff like that. So it kind of skipped the whole training camp aspect and went more straight to practices and working through things. So it's a team that early on in the season last year was really looking for its identity. Well, they get to skip that this year. They know who they are. They know who their leadership group is, and they know what they're all about. So those things usually translate towards success. Now it's just about getting everything back up to speed and everybody on the same page here.
Daniel, there's obviously going to be a lot of eyes on Christian Vesalainen this year playing with the Moose, 2017 first-round pick. There was a belief that maybe he was going to be able to stick with the Jets and play on one of those bottom two lines. But is the belief in the Jets organization, this is where Vesalainen should be right now because he's going to be able to play, you know, top-line minutes, go out there, play on the power play, and get his confidence up and then possibly get a call-up at some point in the season?
Well, I definitely can't speak for the guys who make a lot more money than I do to make those decisions. But when you have a guy like Vesalainen, who's a first-round pick, who's got lots of expectations, who's a very skilled player, very good player, nobody's ever been hurt by playing some time in the AHL. It's a good opportunity to really get the pace of the North American game, get your timing down, because that smaller rink is such an adjustment. And we saw it took Vesalainen some time last year to kind of really make that adjustment. And then he was off to the KHL again. And then he got back and, again, went through that process. So getting into this season, again, it's just a good opportunity for Vesalainen to find his game on the North American ice. He's got that wicked shot, and sometimes just maybe takes that split second too long to make that play just because he's used to having that extra time. So it's an opportunity now for him to kind of figure that out and kind of get to what makes him successful.
Daniel, watching that game last night on the computer, I was watching Sammy Niku and trying to see how he was skating, and you know, to me, to my eye, it looked fairly effortless. He looked like he had recovered from that groin issue he was dealing with throughout Jets training camp. But you were there live, so what did you see in Sammy Niku's play throughout last night's game?
Well, he's Sammy Niku. He does what he does. You're right. It is so effortless to watch him rip around the ice. He had a couple good plays coming back defensively. Jordan Nolan is one of the stalwarts for the San Antonio Rampage this year, and he is a beast at the AHL level just because of that size and that speed that he does have. And Niku was able to stick with him a couple of times and then poke the puck away from him, things like that, when he might have been in a rough situation. So it's always good to see a smaller D-man be able to keep up and handle a big guy like that. So, and Sammy's got to go through his progression here to get into the season. And as the Jets mentioned, they just want him to get some top minutes. They want him to get some reps and get him into playing shape.
Daniel Fink is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Daniel is the Manitoba Moose broadcaster. The Moose in Texas to face the Stars tonight, a game you can hear live, of course, on TSN Radio 1290. Daniel, Mikael Burton is obviously going to be the number one goaltender for the Moose now that Eric Comrie was claimed off waivers by the Arizona Coyotes. You know, behind Burton, you have Adam Karlsson, who has all of 6 games of AHL experience going back to the 2017-18 season. How concerning do you think it is for Pascal Vincent that you have a goaltending tandem with a grand total of 29 AHL games between Burden's 23 last season and Carlson's 6 games a few years ago?
Well, I'm talking to Pascal yesterday. I don't think he's too concerned about it. He's got Mikael Burton in the net, and they really liked what they saw from the young guy last year. He's actually technically still a rookie because he hasn't played enough games, or he didn't play enough games last season. So he gets a second rookie season, essentially. But they liked what they saw from Mikael Burton, and they're confident with him in between the pipes. And I think they've liked what they've seen from Carlson so far. And he got in some games at the rookie showcase with Mikael Burton out of the lineup early on there in training camp. He got in that preseason game with the Moose. So they have got to know him a little bit. And he's a guy who was pretty successful at the ECHL level last year. Threw up a .916, which is pretty solid in that league, and a .291 goals against average, led the league in shutouts. So he had a very good year last year, and I think they wouldn't have signed him to a contract if they didn't think that he'd at least be able to help out if Comrie, according to the original plan, had been called up or something like that. So I think they're happy with where they're at, and with Mikael Burton, he looked stellar last night, maybe a little bit frenetic in the early going of the contest, and then really settled in and was fantastic in the third period.
Daniel, we wanted to ask you about CJ Cees. We were talking about him last week, and Dave and I were agreeing that he had a really good camp for the Jets, and he obviously had all those injury problems last year, and only played about a quarter of a season, a third of a season. Safe to say that the expectations are going to be higher for him, not just from the team, but from Cees himself.
In talking to CJ yesterday, I think that's pretty accurate. I mean, he expects a lot of himself. He had a good start to his pro career. He was leading the Moose in goals at one point there before he was injured. And it was frustrating for him. He said it's something they'd never gone through before, that long of a rehab. And I think he's just relieved to be playing games that matter again. It's been a long preseason for him. He started out at the rookie showcase, played a bunch of games there. Went all the way through Jets training camp, played some preseason games there, played preseason games for the Moose. It was kind of a relief for him yesterday to be into a game that mattered and to be able to contribute to the club. So might still be a little bit of time before he's fully up to speed. It always takes a little bit to get that game speed back, I think. But for a guy like him who's just strong on the puck, is a gritty forward, and nifty around the net, that's a good combination. We'll see what he can do if he can get back to that form that he had early on last season.
Daniel, a couple of guys who were sent down by the Jets, and Luoto and Andre Chibasov. Chibasov played last night. What have you seen from these two so far since they've joined the Moose?
Well, Andre Chibasov's really big. I think that's the easy part, but it's definitely one of his assets when he's moving around out there, because he can get himself around. For a big man like that, he can skate. He's a handful. So I think part of what they're working on with him is using that size more effectively on the smaller rink, knowing that he can use it, because guys aren't going to be able to get away from him as easily as they would have been back in Europe and in the KHL. So I saw him applying that a couple of times last night, and he was a handful down low. Luoto, haven't seen him a lot because he is dealing with a bit of an injury, so hasn't been on the ice a whole ton since he got with the Moose. But in seeing him with the Jets, I mean, he's a guy that, again, he's not big like Chibasov, but he is has a good reach, so relatively rangy forward, has good speed and quickness, and I think they'll be looking for him to really fit in along one of those wings. There is the Moose forward depth is pretty good, and it only helps when you can add in more of those guys.
Daniel Fink is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Daniel is the Manitoba Moose broadcaster. The Moose in Texas tonight, they're going to face the Stars, a game, of course, you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. Daniel, this is his third full season with the Manitoba Moose. Michael Spacek increased his point total from 38 to 41 points last season. What are fair expectations for Spacek as he enters his third professional season?
You just want to see that progression, right? Did add to his point totals, had a really good start to the season, maybe tapered off a little bit through as it went along last year, kind of stepped back on the goal scoring, wasn't quite the power play weapon that he was in his first season, and kind of step more into a playmaker role. So I guess you're looking for those two things to kind of merge at this point to see if he can keep that playmaking center mantra while also being that weapon on the power play and start pumping some goals past those netminders, because he does have that wicked shot from the circle it can be such a weapon when it was clicking. It wasn't quite there last year, so the Moose will be hoping for him to start connecting on those again. And he really can be that top line center in the AHL, and you're looking for him to start pushing maybe towards that NHL job. And that's the goal of everyone here at the Moose, is to push those guys up top and create their opportunities. So for Michael Spacek, he's lining up with Seth Griffith and Logan Shaw right now. We'll see if that sticks through game number two here tonight. But those guys were the best line one of the best lines for the Moose last night. They created some opportunities. Logan Shaw had six shots on goal. Spacek and Shaw assisted on Cameron Schilling's goal. And man, that setup for Michael Spacek for Schilling's tally was impressive. He got into the zone with a little time left on the clock, managed to hold off a couple of defenders, create some space for himself, and then find the defender on the other side of the ice. So he does have that great playmaking ability, and the Moose will be hoping that he can really turn that into a big season.
The Moose will look to get a split on their opening two-game road trip. Daniel Fink will have the call tonight on moosehockey.com and TSN Radio 1290 as the Moose are in Texas to face the Stars. Daniel, thanks so much for joining us this morning, and we'll talk again real soon about the Manitoba Moose.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Likewise. When we come back, we give our thoughts about the Moose season upcoming. We got Dave Minuk in studio. Might as well use that expertise, put it to work. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets and your home of the Moose, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We're in a good place. We have a tight group. A lot of guys are coming back from last year. The mood is right. They work hard. It's been a tough camp, so I think the mindset is right. We're having fun working hard.
That's Manitoba Moose head coach Pascal Vincent talking about his Moose team. As we mentioned, they dropped a 2-1 decision last night in San Antonio. They look for redemption tonight in Texas. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can reach us in studio via Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can also do so via text message. Send your text to 129090. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall. This Manitoba Moose team, Dave, is interesting because, you know, we talked about it with Daniel Fink last segment. It's not a team that's got a lot of overhaul, very similar to last season. Mm-hmm. And the new players aren't what I think people expect to be sort of bottom of the roster players. They expect guys like Chibasov and Luoto to play significant roles for this team. So this Moose team, I think, has a lot of potential to maybe be one of the, I don't know if they're upper echelon, but one of the quality teams, at least in the AHL, to start the season.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that, Drew. I think you're looking at a team, and for me, in the AHL, it's very rare to have that sort of returning product. I mean, there's, you know, that's the whole point of the AHL. Oftentimes, guys get offers in Europe, or they get offers with other teams. They see different opportunity. The idea of loyalty, not necessarily loyalty from the traditional sense, but just that idea of sticking with that team, isn't very often done. So to have just, you know, so few new faces and not have to kind of recreate the system and really change that, I think is a huge asset to this team. Now, does that mean they're going to go on a run and win the next 30 games? No, but I think it definitely holds them in good stead. I think that, you know, there's opportunity still for plenty of guys, all these young prospects. Now, they have a lot of guys on the roster. They have 30 guys on the roster.
Right.
So, I mean, that's a lot of guys. And some guys are going to have to go down to Jacksonville to play to get some ice time.
The Jacksonville hasn't started yet, right?
No.
I think why the roster is so big right now. And it's worth pointing out, and you mentioned this, I think it was on the website, on legalcurve.com, no big deal, but that there is no roster limits in the AHL.
Yeah.
You can obviously only dress so many guys in a game, but right now you can have a 30-man roster and it not be, you know, a contravention of the rules.
Yep, absolutely. And I think, like, that to me is big because, you know, it allows you to mix and match your pieces. And we've now learned from Daniel Fink that Luoto is going to be out doesn't sound like it's going to be long term, but he has an upper body injury. So that's a factor, and allows you to get a guy like Chibasov into the lineup. And you know, again, with the AHL, you're limited to how many veterans you can dress. So that's why guys like Ryan White didn't necessarily play last night. But at the same time, again, to me, it's a function of there's a lot of opportunity for young guys like Michael Spacek, Jansen Harkins. Like Jansen Harkins is a guy, you know, from that 2015 draft class, not a lot of people talk about him for the reason that Jack Roslovic, Sammy Niku, Kyle Connor, Mason Appleton all get the recognition from, and I mean, that's insane if you think about it, from one draft class that we're talking about four guys who have all, in quotes, hit to a certain degree. And now you've got a guy in Jansen Harkins who's a fairly high draft pick, you know, who's not floundering, but, you know, looking for his opportunity. We started to see it last year. I really started to notice he had a little more quickness and his shot was a little more evident. Now, does that mean Jansen Harkins is playing in the NHL anytime soon? I don't think so. But I'm saying that this year for Jansen Harkins and Michael Spacek in the final years of their entry-level deals are really important, critical years for them to show the organization that what they've got and see if the organization is going to want to keep going with them in a significant manner.
And I think you'd agree, Dave. I mean, you look at last year. I mean, you know this, but people forget. I mean, the Moose only missed the playoffs by a couple of points, mm-hmm. right? So they're going
to
be
down to what, the last game of the regular season,
exactly.
Second last game,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about, you know, that division, I mean, with the exception of the San Antonio Rampage, every team in the division was in the mix for a playoff spot. So okay. I wouldn't expect them to be anything but competing and battling for a playoff spot with teams like Iowa and Grand Rapids and Rockford. The Chicago Wolves are always strong.
They play them 12 times this year.
Well, it's worth pointing out that the AHL schedule has changed from previous seasons where you used to see the Moose go out west more often. It was more of a balanced schedule, at least in the Western Conference. Right. This year, it's heavily in their own division.
Yeah.
With, like you said, 12 times against one team is crazy.
It's very unusual. I mean, I think the most traditionally was 8 games against one team, and now you've got 12 against Chicago. Now that's the most by far, but they're not playing the Pacific Coast teams, so they're not playing like the California-based teams, which unfortunately for the Moose means that there's no fun road trips this year as they've done traditionally in the past.
Well, they'll go to Palm Springs when the Palm Springs becomes the 32nd AHL affiliate for Seattle, which they announced earlier this week. So I'm sure people will enjoy a little hockey in the desert in Palm Springs there.
What I think is going to be really interesting about this team is how well Mikael Burden obviously plays early on, but you know, is he able to play upwards of 40 to 50 games? Because you know, we expected Burden to play more games this year. Right, I think he played 23, if I'm not mistaken, last year. So we thought he'd be, you know, closer to 30, 35. But obviously, with Eric Comrie not in the picture, you expect Burden to be somewhere around 40 to 45. So, and Adam Carlson as a backup only has 6 games of AHL experience. So, you know, we talked about it a lot last year, and Eric Comrie was the MVP of the team, right?
That's
You're talking about 25 wins. So goaltending is important at any level of hockey, but especially this year. Mikael Burden, you forget, is 21 years old, and the Jets have, you know, high aspirations for Mikael Burden. They expect him to, at some point, you know, be a backup at the very least at the NHL level, right, Dave? Probably not for at least a couple more years, but I think that's going to be something very interesting, guys, to follow this year is the goaltending. But when you talk about, you know, Andre Chibasov and Juno Luoto, even though he's injured right now, and you talk about, you know, a guy like Jansen Harkins, CJ Cease, guys that they expect to take the next step. Mm-hmm. Goal scoring, as you know, Dave, was the issue for that team last year, this team. So, I mean, I think it's safe to say that the Moose are going to score more goals, but
they're going to rely on
goaltending's a big question mark. It hasn't been for many years now.
Well, the goaltending, I think, in the Winnipeg Jets organization, I mean, I would expect that the Jets organization is going to make a waiver acquisition of a goaltender sometime in this next month. You look at the organizational depth when
they
it comes to
Comrie back. I mean, we don't know if that's going to happen, but there always is the option if the Coyotes put Comrie back on waivers, you'd expect the Jets to be in on him.
It would not surprise me in the least if he was reclaimed or if the Jets tried to address the organizational depth, because you are one injury away from Mikael Burden being your backup goaltender at the NHL level, and then having an AHL goaltender with a grand total of 6 games experience.
And that was my point when people are like, dismissing the Eric Comrie acquisition on waivers by the Coyotes. I said, well, you know, it's easy to, like, I still think Eric Comrie can do something at the NHL level. I think he hasn't had that opportunity. I think you never know until actually you see what happens. The proof is in the pudding. But I think what people forget and what I tried to kind of reiterate was the fact that over and above what you see him as his value within the organization, the reality was that if something happened at the NHL level, Eric Comrie could go and be a placeholder. Mm-hmm. You don't want Mikael Burden to be a placeholder second year pro. So to me, that was the bigger issue. It wasn't what was happening at the AHL level, because I agree that Mikael Burden played, look, he played 50 pro games between the Jacksonville Icemen and the Manitoba Moose last season. Mm-hmm. So I know the organization was happy that he got over the 50 mark. But at the same time, you just don't want that one injury away, one tweak to say, okay, now Mikael Burden is our backup or our starter, and then our depth is being questioned. So to me, I could definitely see a Marco Dano type situation where, you know, the Colorado Avalanche claimed Dano from the Jets and then the Jets reclaimed him back. I could see something similar happening if the Coyotes, because look, Kemper signed a 2-year extension with the Coyotes, mm-hmm. and Ranta is on a conditioning assignment with Tucson, had a shutout in his first game, probably coming back up. Now, are the Coyotes going to carry three goalies for the entire season?
Four, because
they've got Hill, but he's waiver. He's waiver exempt. Yeah, he's waiver exempt. So you don't have to worry about him. But the point is they've got him. And so the question is, are they going to send him down? And I think there was a visa issue with Comrie.
That's right.
So I think that's the reason why Comrie wasn't right away on the lineup, and they required him to be called up. But the point is, they're going to have to send him down, I would imagine, if Ranta's healthy, ready to go. So you've got the two goaltenders.
Yeah. Don't be surprised if this isn't the last we've heard of Eric Comrie.
No, it's also possible that the Coyotes work out a trade. You never know, because maybe they've got the asset. They see it as an option. But again, like I said, I could see the Jets claiming him back just to have that organizational depth.
Absolutely. When we come back, more goaltending talk. We're going to be joined by Marty Biron. You know him as a TSN hockey analyst. We'll talk a little bit about goaltending. We'll talk a little bit as well about the Buffalo Sabres, the team he covers for the most part. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com. Reminder, later on tonight here on the station, you have Blue and Gold Game Day. The Bombers are in Saskatchewan to face the Riders. You have Manitoba Moose Hockey. The Moose are in Texas to face the Texas Stars. And then tomorrow evening, the Jets on Long Island to face the New York Islanders.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined now by TSN hockey analyst Marty Biron. You also know Marty, of course, with his work with the MSG Network, where he covers the Buffalo Sabres. Marty, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. The season finally has started, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. It is getting started. Two games under the belt for the Winnipeg Jets, and we'll get into the Jets and ask you some questions about their goaltending coming up. But before we do that, I want to talk to you about Mike Babcock in Toronto and his decision to make Jason Spezza a healthy scratch for the first game. A lot of was made of it, and of course, it's only one game, and Spezza was in the lineup last night in Columbus. But is that the kind of move by Babcock where he's trying to send a message either to management or to the dressing room? And conversely, does that decision put him right in the crosshairs of the team and saying, you know, this was unnecessary, sort of embarrassing a veteran like that?
I think what happens in the locker room is that players move on from those type of situations pretty quickly. As fans and media members, we tend to remember and remind people of what has happened. If I can take an example, years ago, when Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel first faced a face-off against one another, it was here in Buffalo. The Edmonton Oilers came here to Buffalo, so the Edmonton Oilers have to submit their opening line first. So Connor McDavid is on the ice. Dan Bylsma, the coach of the Sabres at the time, decided not to put Jack Eichel on for the very first face-off against Connor McDavid. It would have been spectacular. Everybody would have been watching. Here's the number one and number two picks of the previous draft going head-to-head on the face-offs. And Bylsma had the opportunity to do it, and he didn't. I'm pretty sure Jack Eichel didn't think too much about it, and he moved on. But as fans and as media people, we talked about that for years after, just because we felt that there was a coach overthinking the situation and not really, go in with what is the natural story of the game. And I think that's what Babcock did, is he overthought the situation. Spezza always wanted to be playing for the Leafs. He's playing against his former team, the Ottawa Senators. Like, just dress the guy. Just put him in the lineup. And sometimes coaches, management, they overthink it. And, yeah, I know Spezza played against Columbus, but still, it's one of those situations where I believe Spezza needed to be in the lineup. He wasn't. You move on. The players won't talk about it much, but the fans and the media will bring it up because it's another case of a coach overthinking the situation. And I like Mike Babcock. He coached me at the World Juniors. I always talk to him when I see him in the morning of games and all of that. I think he's a great coach, but he overthought the situation just a little bit.
Marty, I wanted to ask you about Casey Mittelstadt. Sometimes he almost gets forgotten. Jack Eichel, Jeff Skinner, Rasmus Dahlin, obviously the 2018 first overall pick, but the 2017 draft, the Nico Hischier, Nolan Patrick draft, if you want to call it that, Mittelstadt was an eighth overall pick. Two assists in the opening game. The Devils and Sabres are going to battle tonight. I mean, what are the expectations for Mittelstadt? Because I think you would agree last year was a bit of a disappointing rookie year for him.
It was a very disappointing rookie year. You have to think that Mittelstadt 2 years ago was still playing high school hockey. So, you know, he played a year of college and then boom, he played in the National Hockey League. So, there was no time in the American League. There was not a lot of learning, to be a pro. So last year was a tough year for Casey Mittelstadt and you had to expect that it was going to be that way. He's got a ton of skills, but as most young players, especially without the pro hockey background, that's going to be tough. Now, it was a tough preseason and a tough training camp for Casey Mittelstadt. He did not look great, especially in the first game where he turned the puck over, didn't generate anything. It got better, but funny enough, in Pittsburgh, the last game of the preseason, he scored the shootout winner, a nice backhand move, and I think that alone gave him confidence. And the fact that Ralph Kruger decided to put him on the ice with a couple of, I don't want to say veterans, but you got Connor Sherry, you got Jimmy Vesey, you've got a couple of guys that can lead the way. And then Casey Mittelstadt doesn't have to do a whole lot on the ice. He just got to, keep the game simple. And so what we saw is Connor Sherry really picking him up and scoring a couple of goals. But Mittelstadt played really well in Pittsburgh. A place where, on the road, it could have been hard. Mike Sullivan, the coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins, could have matched up Evgeny Malkin against Mittelstadt, could have gone Sidney Crosby against Mittelstadt. They didn't really do that much, and that really made the job a little bit easier for Mittelstadt. I think other coaches and other teams, especially when the Sabres are on the road, may look to make the matchup a little bit harder for Casey, but so far, so good. I don't expect him to go out and have 70 points this year, but if he could get to the 40-point plateau, I think that would be a very good step in the right direction.
Marty, here in Winnipeg, the Jets have given up 9 goals against in their first 2 games, and fans are, of course, losing their minds. But one thing that's worth noting is that only 2 of the 6 defensemen in the lineup right now are returning players. How long, as a goaltender, does it take to build up that chemistry with your defensemen throughout the season, especially when you have that much of a turnover between in the defense at 1 year for them than the other?
Well, there's different types of chemistry. There's the chemistry with the puck exchanges when the goalie goes out to play the puck. The way that the defense play the front of the net, sometimes some guys like to be very active where, they're going to lay down, they're going to take passing lanes away. Some defensemen have to be, like to be more passive where they're going to give you the shooter and look more for the pass on the back door. So there's a few different things that you have to be ready to read and react from your defensemen. And obviously, the more accustomed you are to your defensemen, the quicker you'll be able to react in those situations. I don't know that from what I saw in the first 2 games with Connor Hellebuyck and Laurent Brossoit that, it was a matter of chemistry. I think a lot of it was, the Jets, they're hurting on defense a little bit, and they're going to have a bit of a harder time in the defensive zone than they did over the last couple of years here. But on the flip side, you look at the game against the Devil last night, 3 out of the 4 goals that the Jets score come from a shot from the blue line, come from defensemen getting pucks to the net, comes from defensemen getting involved in the play. So for me, you have to take some of the bad with some of the good, and you have to try to find a happy balance there. Maybe defensively it hasn't been as good as you wanted to, but they've been able to turn around and create some offense. It's a lot easier to tighten things down defensively, as opposed to tell your guys, hey, we need to score more goals. Everybody wants to score a lot of goals, but you can't really teach that. It's just a matter of guys have the talent to do it. They have the abilities to do it, and then you're lucky if they do. So I think that for Paul Maurice, it's not disastrous. You can tighten things up defensively. You can get better with the chemistry, goalie, defenseman, forwards. But at least they're scoring and they're creating in the attack.
Marty Biron is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Marty, of course, is a TSN hockey analyst. Marty, I don't know if you saw Connor Hellebuck's post-game comments after Thursday's loss to the Rangers, but he was, you know, praising himself, saying that he thought that his game was better than the result that he got on the ice, giving up five goals and, of course, another one into an empty net. You know, how much of goaltending is a mindset, and what do you think about a goaltender, and Connor Hellebuck has really become this one, who almost never criticizes his own performance, at least publicly after a game, when most observers would say there's a lot more to be wanted from his performance that night?
With all due respect, Connor Hellebuck, I stopped listening to a lot of his post-game comments because he's, you know, a very unique public speaker type goaltender. I remember 2 years ago and around Christmas time, they asked him how did he feel about his game, and he said, oh, I feel like I'm playing so much better now than I did earlier in the year. And, you know, the numbers and the eye test was telling me that he was not, but maybe it's his way of feeling positive. I know that you know, a lot of great athletes tend to want to put the bad stuff aside and not think about it and spin everything into the positive. It was that Jack Nicklaus was asked one time, how does it feel when he three putts? And he said, I've never three putted in my life. And they're like, well, there was two yesterday in your round. And he goes, I don't remember those. So, you know, sometimes goalies may adapt the same philosophy. So I think that's probably what Connor Hellebuck is doing, because really, when you look at his game against the Rangers, there was some good moments, but there's a lot of indecisiveness, a lot of late reacting. So for me, he's overthinking the game maybe a little bit right now, and I predicted it was going to be a tough year for Connor Hellebuck. I know that there's a lot of pressure on him. There's a lot of pressure on both goaltenders because of the way the defense was so drastically changed. So when he says things like that, I chuckle and I move on. I don't put too much into what he'll say after a game. Sometimes it's just a matter of being in the right place psychologically, especially at the start of the season.
Marty, it's only been one game in the Ralph Kruger era, but so far so good. They picked up a win over the Pittsburgh Penguins 3-1. We mentioned earlier the Sabres are going to play the Devils tonight, and you've covered this team obviously for many years in addition to playing for the Sabres. Is it too early to say that Ralph Kruger has already put his stamp on this team in regards to the outlook and the culture, or have you noticed something early on this season in regards to Ralph Kruger having an effect on the Sabres team?
Well, it's very early to be able to predict as to if the Sabres are going to play the majority of the games the same way they played against the Pittsburgh Penguins. But one thing that we saw in Pittsburgh on Thursday night was that they really moved the puck quickly up the ice. A lot of stretch passes, a lot of north-south type of action. And not so much let's go east-west, let's go D-to-D, go back to the D, go across the ice to the low winger. It was one D-to-D pass, straight up the middle, or straight up the wall. Let's get guys skating through the neutral zone. Let's go up the ice. Let's use speed. It reminded me a lot of how the Pittsburgh Penguins used to play, you know, 7-8 years ago, where as soon as they won a faceoff, they just sprung the puck up the ice, and then you had so much speed coming at you that it was hard to handle. The Sabres got maybe 5 or 6 partial breakaway or breakaways against the Pittsburgh Penguins. We have not seen that at all season, or even in the last 2 years for Buffalo. So the fact that Zemgus Girgensson ended up with a breakaway shorthanded, another breakaway late in the game, Jeff Skinner had a partial breakaway, you had Victor Olofsson had a breakaway. You've had so many of those in a situation where they played a lot faster, they kept things a lot more simple, and, you know, it made a big difference. So that definitely was a different look for Buffalo.
Last question for you, Marty. Marty Biron, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. If you had to pick one goaltender in the league to maybe be a breakout candidate this year, who would that goaltender be?
I don't know that I can say breakout candidate, but I'm looking at Ben Bishop at being like possibly the best goalie in the National Hockey League this year. And I know this, you know, Bishop has been a really a top-tier goaltender for the last few seasons, but the way Jim Montgomery, the coach of the Dallas Stars, has them playing, the way Bish has shown a lot more, I don't want to say composure, but he seems to be making things a lot easier on himself. If he can stay healthy and if he can get 60 starts, he's the guy that I say now can jump into, hey, Ben Bishop for Vezina Trophy type situation. So I think he'll be really good. And obviously, and this was just one game against the Chicago Blackhawks yesterday, but I really believe Carter Hart will be the type of player like Carey Price was when Carey Price first broke into the league. So for me, Carter Hart is a breakthrough guy in his second year, if we can say that. He only played a half a year last season, but I'm looking at Carter Hart and Ben Bishop as two guys that will really be at the top.
Marty Biron is a TSN hockey analyst. He also covers the Buffalo Sabres for MSG. Marty, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey
Show. Okay, have a good one, guys.
Take care, Marty. Thanks again. When we come back, we talk about who is on the hot seat at the start of the 2019-20 NHL season. Is it a coach? Is it a player? Is it a general manager? We'll tell you whose seat is warm to start. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Well, I think someone certainly feeling the heat is Mike Babcock, and that probably doesn't come as any shock to him. He heard these questions at the end of last season after yet another disappointing first-round loss to the Boston Bruins. Those questions simmered all summer. Look, this is year five of the Babcock experience in Toronto, and I have a hard time believing that he sees year six if the Leafs don't take a step forward and get out of the first round this year.
That's TSN hockey analyst, hockey reporter Frank Saravelli saying that Mike Babcock is feeling the heat in Toronto. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, a concert series event. You know him from the Chappelle Show. Danelle Rawlings is in town, his final night in town. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Get them before they're sold out. Two shows, 7:15 and 10 p.m.
I saw Donnell Rawlings either 2 years ago or 3 years ago, I forget.
Uh-huh.
He was awesome. So if you have a chance to go check him out, you mentioned he was on the Chappelle Show, but he's, I mean, every act at Rumors is amazing, but he's definitely worth checking out.
Absolutely. So let's start with what Frank said there off the top about Mike Babcock on the hot seat in Toronto. Certainly didn't do anything to put himself out of the crosshairs with his decision to start, to not start Jason Spezza, rather, in game one against the Senators. It seems like there's no love loss whatsoever between Mike Babcock and Kyle Dubas. That's strictly my outsider's point of view. If the Leafs, I don't think they're going to struggle in the regular season, but if they don't get past the first round, is Mike Babcock, you know, going to be finish off that epic contract he signed in Toronto?
Well, I mean, it's a good question. I think my inclination would be that if there is a better candidate to take your group to that next level, and you don't feel that Babcock is it, then sure, of course, if you're Kyle Dubas, you know that you have to look. There's only so many years that folks in Toronto are going to put up with the first round of the playoffs, especially knowing how good this team is and what they've committed to this team. So Toronto is always the hottest seat because all eyes are in Toronto, mm-hmm. and everybody is so passionate for that Leafs team in that city. So to me, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, Mike Babcock is a very winning coach. He's got a long pedigree he can point to, but at the end of the day, it's what have you done for me lately, not what did you do in the past for other teams. And for the Toronto Maple Leafs and their fans, it's not about what have you done for the Detroit Red Wings. It's what have you done for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I strongly believe that if he cannot get this team past the first round, then yeah, there's a likelihood if there's another candidate, you know, that maybe the Leafs are grooming it with the Marlies, then potentially we see that happen. But I, you know, that to me would be a hot seat, but that's of course not a regular season hot seat. That's a post, like that's next summer,
that's
hot
a playoff
seat.
Hot seat.
Right. Babcock has to be one of the coaches on the hot seat for many of the reasons that Dave just mentioned, right? When you've given out the contracts to Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and, you know, prior to that, Morgan Riley, but, you know, William Nylander got the big contract, John Tavares. I mean, Kyle Dubas has done his job here. I mean, he's put together a really good team. I mean, acquiring Tyson Barrie, I realize that, you know, you lose some center depth by trading Nazem Kadri, but I mean Tyson Barrie is obviously going to make them just more potent from the back end. He's obviously a pending RFA, but mm-hmm. I mean they're clearly going for it this year, guys. I mean it's Stanley Cup or bust. I don't care what anybody says. Obviously they would take a trip to the Eastern Conference Final or a trip to the Stanley Cup Final, but you're absolutely right. We might as well just pencil in Toronto versus Boston in the first round right now, right? Mm-hmm. I mean obviously they could play Tampa or another team, but it seems like they play every year in the first round. So I agree with you. I mean, if they don't, I would say at the very least go to the East Final. I don't even think going to the second round, Drew, is going to cut it. Well, like, I really think that he has to do something special with this team. And I mean go all the way to the final or at the very least go to the Final Four. Because, I mean, there aren't many teams, maybe with the exception of Tampa Bay, and maybe one or two others that are better offensively than the Leafs. Like the Leafs are right up there, top three, top five offensive team. Obviously, Freddie Anderson is, you know, a top 10 goalie at the very least in the NHL. So this team has to do something.
You know, I think it's a fascinating season, sort of, if you look at the coaching situation in the NHL. So we talked about Babcock, put him to the side for a second. Mm-hmm. You look at the other teams in this league, and I don't think there are any sort of overwhelming candidates to replace their coach, you know, not even early in the season, but at the midway point of the season. Like, you knew last year that a guy like Joel Quenneville in Chicago, there was already talk that it might not work out. You heard last year about, of course, Mike Yeo in St. Louis, and he was eventually replaced by Craig Berube, and they won the Stanley Cup. But you look at the other coaches throughout the league, there's not a lot of coaches I would suggest that are really, you know, potentially going to lose their job in the regular season this year, because so many of them are new and so many of them are on teams that don't necessarily have a lot of expectations.
Right. DJ King is not, you know, on the hot seat, and Bruce Boudreau for me is on the hot seat, but I don't think he's a candidate to lose his job early. Like,
but there's no expectations in Minnesota because,
well, I think the expectations are to make the playoffs. I mean, Bill Guerin has said that.
Yeah, but Bill Guerin said it, but Bill Guerin, I think, is also smart enough to know that the limitations to the roster in Minnesota that Bruce Boudreau, more than almost any other coach that they could hire, is going to get as much out of that roster as possible
in the regular season.
But
Boudreau is not Bill Guerin's guy. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, There's no reason to believe. So if the Wild miss the playoffs, you bring Bruce Boudreau back.
I'm talking a regular season, mid season coaching change. Forget about.
No, and I said that. I said I don't think Bruce Boudreau is going to be fired early on. I'm just saying, like, hot seat for the whole year.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm just saying. If the Wild don't get into the playoffs, and you know, I wouldn't be so quick to say that they're not going to make the playoffs. I realize a lot of people have them finishing sixth or seventh in the Central, which very well could happen. But Bruce Boudreau, at every single level, the minor league level, American Hockey League, all that, Bruce Boudreau always has his teams in the playoffs. Maybe they don't go as far as you would like. All I'm saying is, if you're looking at other coaches that are on the hot seat this season,
yeah,
I would say Boudreau. But I agree with you, Drew. I don't think you're going to see as many. I don't think you're going to see like a Mike Yeo or, you know, a Todd Richards from 5 years ago, right? Like, I don't know if you're necessarily going to see a coach fired in the first, you know, 5 to 15 games, unless a team, you know, really does poorly.
It wouldn't surprise me if a coach doesn't get fired at all during the regular season. Which is what we saw 2 years ago. Yeah. Exactly right. You look at the coaches. So many of them are new to their teams.
I would say John Cooper's on the hot seat as well. Like, not early on in the season, but I would say, you know, he's on the hot seat.
Well, if they struggled
this year,
if they were only average, and I don't expect them to only be average because they're so talented, but if they're only average at the 30 right. or the 40 game mark.
Right.
You wonder if his message has run out in Tampa Bay because of how last season ended and if they struggle to start this year. But I don't expect that to be the situation. But to your point, if they go out in the first round again, then he'd really be on the hot seat, Dave.
Got to give Bruce Bruder a credit. He's not many coaches outlast that many GMs. I think he's on his third GM right now. So that's a fairly substantial thing. And Sheldon Keefe was the name I was trying to think of for the Marlies right now. And he's the guy who I would imagine the Marlies are the Maple Leafs are grooming to be the next head coach.
And
once
he's Kyle Dubas's guy.
That's what I mean. So that's why I'm saying, so from my perspective, they do have the guy in waiting in Sheldon Keefe.
Exactly right. So we will see what the hot seat ends up bringing for players, coaches, and general managers throughout the NHL. When we come back, we're going to give some our predictions about who's going to win some awards this season in the NHL. Who do you like as the Hart Trophy, the Art Ross Trophy, Vezina, etc., etc.? Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Here are the finalists for the Hart Memorial Trophy, recognizing the player who is most valuable to his team. Take a look.
A lot of Jeopardy references on today's show. There's Alex Trebek introducing the Hart Trophy. I was going to say Hart Ross, but that's not the case. The Hart Trophy at last year's NHL Awards. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Reminder, Blue and Gold game day coming up later on this afternoon. The Bombers look to avenge their last two defeats. They're going to go into Saskatchewan tonight to face the Rough Riders. Going to be a key matchup for the Bombers if they want to continue their chances and their hopes to win the Western Division. Walby, Westwood, and Bombing have coverage coming up later on this afternoon here on TSN Radio 1290. It's not the start to the season until we give our NHL awards predictions. This happens each and every year. So let's start with the Art Ross Trophy, the most points in the NHL. You know, Connor McDavid is obviously the overwhelming favorite for this, assuming he would stay healthy. Are you going to go off the board, or is it a McDavid sweep between yourself, Ezra, and yourself, Dave?
Yeah, well, I'm taking McDavid, and there really are only, what, three or four people that are in the conversation, maybe five. I mean, you're talking about Kucherov, you're talking about Crosby, Kane.
McKinnon.
I'd throw Nathan McKinnon in there as well. Maybe you get to six or seven, but really, I would say it's probably going to be a two-horse race between McDavid and Kucherov. So I'm going to go McDavid. I think we talked about it a little bit last week. I wouldn't be surprised if McDavid hits 125 or 130 this year.
Yeah, 116 last year, of course, for McDavid. Kucherov had that career Same. Season, you know, most points ever by a Russian player in the NHL in 1 year with 128. It's likely between one of those two guys. Leon Draisaitl may be a bit of a dark horse. He had the 105-point season, and I'm not just saying that because I picked him in our hockey pool, but maybe I am.
You picked a great team. I texted you after the draft.
I thought suffered a stroke or something. He praised my hockey picks.
No, you were making a lot of good picks that our good friend Hart and I were thinking of selecting, so I think you're winning right now after three nights.
Well, then.
A little early to be getting excited about that.
Dave, I was winning after the second night. I took a screenshot, and that's going to keep me going for the rest of the year.
Sure. Go up on the fridge.
Exactly. Rocket Richard Trophy for the most goals scored in the NHL. Last year, of course, Alex Ovechkin, the perennial candidate, he had 51 to beat Draisaitl by one goal. Is it Ovechkin's to win again, or is it somebody else that's going to come in and knock off the great eight?
Yeah, well, I think Ovechkin's won the Rocket Richard seven or eight times. It's
crazy number.
It's one of the two. So, I mean, it's really tough to bet against Ovechkin. I think, you know, Draisaitl is going to be up there. I think Patrick Laine is going to be up there. So, you know, look out for Patrick Laine. But, you know, I'm going to go Ovechkin. I mean, that's the easy pick.
I'm going with Draisaitl. I think that him and McDavid will be running up the numbers this season. So I think Draisaitl is going to win the Maurice Rocket Richard Trophy.
Well, we certainly know that the Oilers have defensive troubles, and they lost Adam Larson for 6 to 8 weeks, and we know they have goaltending issues probably as well. So that certainly offensively inclined Edmonton Oilers team will be the case.
I'll throw out one more guy that I think will also be in the mix that maybe isn't talked about enough, and that's Austin Matthews, because he had 40 in his rookie year, 37 last year, but he missed a bunch of games. So I would expect, you know, Matthews to be somewhere in the kind of 45 goal range this year.
Certainly one of the best, if not the best, 5-on-5 goal scorer in the NHL. And yeah, I agree with you. I think Austin Matthews certainly is one of the candidates there as well. Let's go for the overall Hart Trophy winner, the most valuable player to your team. can that be a player on the team that doesn't make the playoffs? I mean, you know, that's the knock against McDavid the last couple seasons. Is it, you know, nobody really has Edmonton as a playoff team. So who's your Hart Trophy winner for this coming season?
Yeah, I'm going to go Nathan MacKinnon. I'm just a huge MacKinnon fan. And obviously he was a finalist, but he hasn't won it yet. And, you know, I don't think that he's going to necessarily, you know, compete with McDavid for the Art Ross, just because McDavid and Kucherov last year especially separated themselves from the rest of the pack. But I mean, Colorado, we know, is a favorite to win the Central Division. So I'm going to go with MacKinnon. But really, when you're talking about the Hart Trophy, I mean, there's a lot of candidates here. And, you know, I think, you know, Taylor Hall, if the Devils end up getting close to a playoff spot and end up squeaking in, Taylor Hall is always in the mix too. But I got to go MacKinnon.
I'm going McDavid. I think he's just too good. He's too important to his team. And I think if the Oilers can make it to the playoffs, I don't have them doing that. But if they can, then it's going to be because Connor McDavid dragged them there.
Let me ask you guys this. Should the Hart Trophy winner be, can he be a candidate if your team doesn't make the playoffs?
Yes.
Yes. It should be, yep. Because the whole point is it's an individual award. We're not awarding it based on what your team is doing.
It's kind of an unwritten rule, right?
Right. But it doesn't make any, you know, like to me, it's like, of course you should be able to, because we're awarding this for the best individual effort. This isn't a team award. It's the MVP of the team.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290 going through our predictions for the upcoming NHL awards for the 2019-20 season. We move from the Hart Trophy to the Vezina Trophy. Last year, it was Andre Vasilevsky in Tampa Bay who ended up being the Vezina winner. Who do you think is going to win the Vezina this year? Can he run it back for a second year in a row?
No, well, he could, but I'm going to go with one of the finalists last year, Ben Bishop. I've always been a big Ben Bishop fan. I think Dallas, you know, is just going to be better this year. Ben Bishop is just so technically sound. We know how big he is and how well he covers that net. You know, Dallas is going to be right in there with, you know, the Avalanche, the Predators, the Jets, the Blues for, you know, winning that Central Division. So I got to go Bishop.
I think this guy is going to elevate the center of the universe to the next level. And I think Frederik Andersen is the guy who's going to take home the Vezina.
I like that pick.
I think the Leafs are going to maybe shake off a little bit of what, you know, that rust, and they've got everybody signed. They've got their kind of their core group. And like you said, Drew, earlier in the segment, in the previous segment, this is a team that knows they have to go for it. So I think Andersen is part of that. I think he's going to get an opportunity in Toronto. Well, I mean, he's had the opportunity, but I think he's going to really elevate his game. So I've got Andersen winning the Vezina.
Bishop, to Ezzy's point, led the NHL in save percentage last year with a .934 save percentage. Dave Minuk leading in trolling the audience so far on this Saturday morning. Let's keep looking at our awards predictions for the coming season. The Norris Trophy, the defenseman. Who's going to win that this season?
I'm going back to Victor Hedman. He won it a couple years ago, and, you know, his offensive numbers were down a little bit this year, but, you know, I have him kind of getting back to that 70-point range. So, for my money, I mean, the two best defensemen in the league are Hedman and Doughty. Doughty, I just don't think his offensive numbers are going to put him in the Norris conversation, so I'm going to go Hedman.
Well, I was going to go Morgan Riley because, you know, I haven't picked enough Leafs already today because...
And second place, Tyson Barrie.
No, but I mean, Morgan
Followed
Riley...
Followed by Cody Ceci.
I mean, he hit 70 points last season. I mean, that's a pretty impressive number. And then John Carlson is another guy who I think doesn't get a ton of recognition, but I think he's a guy who's really good. And, you know, obviously Giordano in Calgary is also a candidate. I'm going to go with John Carlson. I'm going a little off the board.
That is a little off the board. You don't hear a lot of people mention John Carlson, but he does have the offensive numbers. The question is, you know, is his defensive game going to be good enough to award him with the Norris Trophy? But Dave Minuk says, yes, it is. Calder Trophy, best rookie in the NHL. Mr. Ginsberg, Kaapo Kakko, Jack Hughes, somebody else.
Yeah, Cale Makar is a guy for me that was in the conversation as well. I'm going to go a little off the board here and take a good Winnipeg boy, Cody Glass.
It's my pick.
Well, Glass certainly got a good start scoring for the Golden Knights in their first game was that Wednesday night?
It was, yes, Wednesday night. So, I mean, he's centering the second line. Mm-hmm. He's playing with Max Pacioretty and Mark Stone, right? Mm-hmm. So,
pretty good opportunity to make an impact.
And that's why I ended up picking the Golden Knights to go to the Stanley Cup final this year. I mean, it's obviously not certain at all, but I mean, that's a first line on 30 other teams. I think it should be called the Golden Knights first line, but obviously, you know, you got Carlson, Marchessault, and Smith, which is their 1A, if you want to call it that. So I'm going Cody Glass, but, you know, I could easily see going with Cale Makar or Jack Hughes.
Dave? I could go through it, but I just said, yeah, Cody Glass is the guy. I think that he's a well-spoken kid. He's a understated kid, and he's, you know, he's a heck of a hockey player. And I think that Cody Glass is going to wow some people. So I think that I'm sticking with the Winnipeg kid.
Two more to go. We're talking about our awards predictions here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Jack Adams Trophy for the Coach of the Year. Who is going to excel behind the bench in this 2019-20 season? Always a sort of a wide open award, you know, year in and year out.
Yeah, it really is wide open. You know, I want to throw in Jared Bednar. I want to throw in Jim Montgomery. I mean, there's a lot of coaches. I mean, I said this earlier. I think Barry Trotz is the best coach in the NHL. So if the Islanders make the playoffs again, does Barry Trotz not deserve to be a finalist? But you know, I'm going to go Rick Tocchet a little bit off the board. I think Tocchet did a really good job with that Coyotes team last year. A young team, a team that we know, we've talked about this. They had all types of injuries and significant injuries when you're talking about, you know, Antti Raanta and Nick Schmaltz, guys like that. So I'm going to say Rick Tocchet, and that's also because I have the Coyotes making the playoffs. But obviously, if the Coyotes fall a little bit short, he probably won't be a finalist.
David?
I'm going to go with Jim Montgomery. I think that he's going to be able to get it done. I think that, you know, there's another team that we were talking about them last week who are in a win now situation. And I think he's going to be that guy to take them to the next level. He's won at the USHL level. He won at the college level. So he's a really good head coach. And I think he'll be able to get that group that next level.
Here's a little bit of a dark horse. I've doubled down on my Buffalo Sabres as a playoff team candidate. Ralph Kruger for Coach of the Year.
Yep.
Last one, General Manager of the Year.
What about the Selke?
Sorry, I forgot the Selke. You're right.
I'll stick with a good Winnipeg boy. Mark Stone is my pick for the Selke. I mean, Ryan O'Reilly, Patrice Bergeron, I mean, those were finalists last year. I think they're going to be in the mix, but I'll go Mark Stone.
I'm going to go with Sasha Barkov. I think that he's going to finally start getting that. You know, Florida, I think now with Bobrovsky and that, I think as they start to challenge to be for the playoffs, I think more people are going to be paying attention to Florida, and I think Barkov will get the recognition.
And you got another guy we should throw in is Couturier.
Yeah.
Last one, then. Did I forget anything else? No? No. We're good. General Manager of the Year.
Yeah, GM of the Year is always
tough one,
a hard one because the moves haven't happened yet. I think that you really have to base it on what they've done over the course of the regular season. So
you can pass on it if you want. I'll let you. I'll give you one pass a season. This can be your pass.
I was going to say, do people actually care about GM of the Year?
Not the,
you
the
know,
GMs
I'll,
do,
I'll, you know, I'll kind of follow your lead. I'll go Jason Botterill.
Yeah, interesting. They made a lot of moves. They brought in a lot of players there. I mean, Jason Botterill, I like it.
He's a really smart hockey guy, and obviously that's going to depend probably on if the Sabres make the playoffs or not, but I really like the moves that Jason Botterill made in the offseason. We've talked about it. I mean, you know, so I'll say Botterill.
Well, I'm going to stick with my Dallas. I'm going with Jim Neal. I talked about him last week. I said I think he's going to be aggressive at the trade deadline, so I'm going Jim Neal.
There you have it. That is our predictions for the upcoming NHL season. Will we be right? Probably not, but you can always throw it back in our face later on as the year progresses. When we come back, one final segment this Saturday morning. We're going to look around the NHL, some contracts, some injuries, and we'll wrap it up, of course, with cheers and jeers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The practical reality is that there's just not that type of defenseman available. Adam Larson logged huge minutes for the Edmonton Oilers on that shutdown pair with Darnell Nurse. There's nothing like that available on waivers or in trade.
TSN Hockey Insider Bob McKenzie, the re-signed TSN Hockey Insider Bob McKenzie. Congratulations for Bob on signing that contract extension. Talking about the Oilers' loss of Adam Larson for 6 to 8 weeks with a fractured fibula. You know, this Oilers team doesn't have a lot of depth. They don't have a lot of, you know, I mean, they have some young talent, the guys like Evan Bouchard, who, of course, was their first round pick 2 years ago. How significant of a loss is this to the Edmonton Oilers? Is this going to sort of be already put them severely behind an eight ball heading into the first couple months of the season?
Yeah, there's no doubt that it's a significant loss, right? And we know that they just don't have the deepest blue line as it is. But Adam Larson is in your top four, and you know, we already discussed this. He plays big minutes, and I mean, it's not as significant as losing Connor McDavid, obviously, or Leon Draisaitl, but you got to think that Ken Holland is going to try to make a move, because even though we all kind of believe that the Oilers are long shots to make the playoffs, I do think they're going to be better than they were last year. But
they're certainly going to be more professional just by having Holland and Tippett behind the bench. I think they're going to have more structure and, you know, have more of at least of a vision.
Right. And that, and also like, look at the top of the Pacific Division. Mm-hmm. I think we all agree Vegas, San Jose, Calgary are the best three teams. I mean, I picked the Coyotes to make the playoffs and the Flames to miss. I mean, I don't feel very confident in saying that. I wouldn't be surprised if the Flames make the playoffs.
Well, but the Sharks look like they could fall out right now.
But the point is, though, Dave, I mean, you know, even though the Canucks will probably be better, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a pretty wide open division if you think about it when you compare it to the Central, right? Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't necessarily write off the Oilers because Larson is injured, but it certainly doesn't help. And, you know, I really like a guy like Ethan Bear. I mean, he scored either one or two goals against the Jets in the preseason. But, you know, Bear's a guy that you want to ease into the lineup on the third pair. I believe mm-hmm. they sent him down recently. But, you know, they just don't have the depth. You don't have a guy. I mean, Bob McKenzie just said it. You don't have someone to replace Adam Larson. And it would be the same thing, you know, if the Jets, you know, end up losing Dustin Byfuglien for the whole season. Obviously, Buff is a better defenseman than Adam Larson. So, you know, it's horrible news that it happens, you know, this early in the season.
Quickly, a couple contract signings, a couple extensions this year. Braden Schenn signs an 8-year, $52 million deal to stay with the St. Louis Blues. And then sticking in the Central Division, Alex DeBrincat signs a 3-year, $19.2 million extension. He was going to be an RFA at season's end. Schenn was going to be a UFA at season's end. These contracts, good from your perspective, both of you gentlemen?
I mean, I like Braden Schenn as a player, but I think that term is, I mean, he's 28 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, giving him that long a contract is a problem. I mean, again, I don't know why you would sign him. I mean, I understand the player wants that type of term, but to me, it just seems like too long a deal. I like the player, mm-hmm. you know, but I don't know if I would give him that long a deal.
Yeah, and, you know, last year, Braden Schenn missed 10 games, but prior to that, he barely missed any games. I think he's missed, in the last 6 years, 12 games.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Schenn has been, he's been a very durable yeah. player. And obviously, you know, he's had, you know, his best years with the St. Louis Blues, and he was a huge part of the Stanley Cup winning team. But I agree with Dave. I was a little bit shocked that they went 8 years. Like, mm-hmm. I was thinking maybe, you know, 5 years, maybe 6 years, but I think, you know, towards the end of that deal, you're probably overpaying him. But I think the way Doug Armstrong looks at it, you're really paying him for the next 3, 4, 5 years.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Dave Vanuk, cheer or jeer?
I'm going to cheer the fact that hockey is back. I mean, I know it's general, but the reality is that not having to talk about preseason hockey, games that don't matter, both the NHL and now the AHL are underway. And that to me is a good thing because it's a lot more exciting. It's a lot more interesting. And so there's a lot more of fresh content to talk about on a little site called illegalcurve.com.
I love that cheers or jeers are back because we used to do it when Richie was on the show. And I think basically we stopped doing it after Richie left the show.
Yeah,
so
who?
I'm going to go with the birthday boy, Mario Lemieux, my favorite hockey player of all time. The first hockey jersey that I ever bought, number 66. I believe he's 54 years old today. So
happy birthday to Mario Lemieux.
Happy birthday to Mario. Cheers to Mario.
I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers by cheering the blood feud that exists between Ryan Reeves and Evander Kane and the San Jose Sharks and the Golden Knights. It's certainly the best rivalry right now in the NHL. And this is a league that needs more hate. And seeing what goes on between those two, Ryan Reeves is, as the kids say, living rent-free in Evander Kane's brain. If you saw what happened at the end of that exhibition game and everything else.
Those two teams, yeah. And I said that, they hate each other. It's great. It's fantastic.
That's it for this Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Big thank you to our guests, Ken Wiebe, Andrew Gross, Daniel Fink, and Marty Biron. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca. It's on illegalcurve.com. It's everywhere you get your podcasts. Search for us, subscribe to us, rate us, review us, let us know what you think of the show. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Asor for doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuke, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.